Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I host the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. I'm also the author of the recent book, Bears vs. Cardinals, the NFL's Oldest Rivalry. These two clubs first met in 1920 and will be renewing that rivalry again this year on December 24th in Chicago. In honor of that occasion, I'm very pleased to announce that the Sports History Network will be offering two free copies of my book to its listeners. To qualify for this great gridiron giveaway, just go to the link at sportshistorynetwork.com/Christmas 2023. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/Christmas 2023. Please enter by the closing date of December 15th so that we have enough time to contact you for a personal inscription of the book, and then ship the book to you for arrival prior to December 25th. And as always, thank you for listening to the Sports History Network, and good luck.
One of the great things about gridiron history is it spans over a lot of generations and times, and January 27th, what we're going to talk about today in our football history headlines, it is one of those days where you can go back all the way into the 19th century, cover parts of the 20th century, and into the 21st century. We'll span the decades of football history for this January 27th in just a moment.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. My football friends, this is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pig Pen, where we will talk about the great gridiron history for the date of January 27th in our football history headlines. But before we get to that, I just want to let you know about an event that's going to take place next week, February 6, 2021, at 9 a.m., and you can go to this event at 21 Strong Forever. Is the site that it's at, and it's called Superfest. And one of our friends of the show, Craig Woodard Sr., is going to come on the show next week on February 1st, on Monday, to talk about Superfest and some of his great NFL veterans that are going to help him with this program. And I just want to make sure you set that date, February 6th, 9 a.m., to join at 21 Strong Forever. We'll talk more about it as we get closer. Now let's get you your football history headlines. We'll start off January 27th, 1894, the first college basketball game in which the University of Chicago defeated Chicago's YMCA by the score of 19-11. Kind of surprising for a basketball score, but basketball was a little bit different back then. Basketball was invented in December of 1891 by James Naismith at the YMCA School for Christian Workers, now called the Springfield College, in Springfield, Massachusetts. According to the Chicago History, collegiate basketball also came to Chicago from Springfield College in the person of Amos Alonzo Stagg, the University of Chicago's new faculty coach, who had played on the Springfield teachers team in the first public basketball contest. According to Jennifer Taylor Hall's book, Amos Alonzo Stagg, Football's Man in Motion, Stagg had began his coaching career the next year at Springfield, Massachusetts YMCA, now the Springfield College. Stagg organized the school's first football team, and among his players was James Naismith, the inventor of basketball. The two men used basketball with its five-man-per-side game as an exercise regimen to keep their 11 football players in tip-top shape. Stagg enjoyed the game so much, and it relied on it so much to train football players in the offseason that Naismith had developed, he took it with him when he moved to the University of Chicago, and hence that very first college basketball game was played. January 27th, 1924, the Kansas City Blues, which a year later would be called the Kansas City Cowboys franchise, was formed. According to a post on the sportscyclopedia.com, the NFL in just its fifth season was looking to expand west of the Mississippi. And first most logical place geographically west of the Mississippi was Kansas City. They adopted a name, the Blues, due to the local minor league baseball team that played their home games at Muehlbach Field. The Blues' first game would come on October 5th with a 3-0 loss to the Milwaukee Badgers. In 1925, they would be called the Cowboys, and they played the entire season with road games. The biggest game of 1925 was a 17-0 road upset of the Cleveland Bulldogs. There would not be another season in Kansas City after 1926, as the cost of traveling to and from Kansas City was too cost prohibitive in the NFL's fledgling formative years. The Cowboys' final game would come on December 12, 1926, with a 12-7 win over the Duluth Eskimos at Muehlbach Field. January 27, 1955. The top pick in the 1955 NFL draft was George Shaw from the University of Oregon, as he was the first pick by the Baltimore Colts. Remarkably, there was only one other player from this entire draft that made it into the Pro Football Hall of Fame thus far, and that was a 9th-round pick that was 102nd overall, the quarterback from the University of Louisville, named Johnny Unitas by the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers, not realizing the great talent they had landed, promptly cut him before training camp was over, per the ProFootballReference.com. January 27, 1956, the NFL's New York Football Giants franchise ended up having their home games played at the Polo Grounds, now called Yankee Stadium, their home field, per Larry Schmidt of the Big Blue Interactive. The story goes that Commissioner Burt Bell notified Giants owner Tim Mara that an offer from a Texas-based oil company wanted to pay the Maras $1 million for the team as long as they played at a larger venue like Yankee Stadium. Mara declined the offer, but figured it to be a pretty good idea to get more butts in the stands with a larger seating capacity of Yankee Stadium. So he did. He made the move. January 27, 1960. The first 14-game home-and-away schedule was adopted in the AFL, and that's per the Raiders.com website. January 27, 1967. New Orleans Saints signed their very first player, kicker Paige Cawthron, and that information comes from the CanalStreetChronicles.com. Cawthron was a former Ole Miss fullback that played in the NFL for the LA Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles before coming to the Saints. January 27, 1969, Chuck Knoll is named the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers per the SliceLife.com website article. Knoll was the youngest coach in NFL history at the time, at the ripe old age of 37. Chuck Knoll had been the defensive coordinator and once the DB coach of the Baltimore Colts under Don Shula, who, by the way, highly recommended Knoll for the job. Knoll spent 23 seasons on the sidelines of the Steelers until he stepped away in 1992. Under Chuck Knoll, the Steelers won 4 Super Bowl championships in 6 seasons during the 1970s. And the Steelers and Knoll must have really liked the date of January 27th, because on January 27th, 1970, the NFL draft took place, and the Steelers chose future Hall of Fame quarterback Terry Bradshaw from Louisiana Tech with the first pick of the entire 1970 NFL draft. Bradshaw would be the signal caller that would win those 4 Super Bowls up for Chuck Knoll that we just talked about a second ago. And Terry was the MVP of 2 of them. January 27th, 1980. Aloha Stadium in Honolulu. At the NFL Pro Bowl, the NFC team defeated the AFC 37-27. The game's MVP was New Orleans Saints running back Chuck Muncy. 5 years later to the day, on January 27, 1985, also at Aloha Stadium in Honolulu, Hawaii, then came the NFL Pro Bowl for the 1984 season, and this time the AFC knocked off the NFC 22-14. Mark Gastineau, the animated defensive end of the New York Jets, won the Most Valuable Player award in the game. And now we have the big event from this day in football history. January 27, 1991, at Tampa Stadium in Tampa, Florida, Super Bowl 25 was one of the most remembered Super Bowls of all time. People still talk about it to this day. The statement that takes an avid NFL fan back to this game is the words, "wide right." Yes, you see, the New York Giants defeated the Buffalo Bills by the slimmest of margins, 20-19. And as Captain Obvious says, you can't win by any more than one. But it almost had a very different result. You see, with just 4 seconds remaining, after Jim Kelly orchestrated an impressive desperation drive to set up a 47-yard field goal attempt by the Bills' very accurate kicker, Scott Norwood. And as you've already heard, the ball went slightly outside the uprights to the right. The Giants' win is preserved, and a torture set in for the Bills fans. The Washington Post calls the game the closest and most even ever played. The game's MVP was Giants running back Otis Anderson, who ran for 102 yards and a score. That was definitely one fine and exciting Super Bowl to watch. January 27, 2002, at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, at the 2001 season's AFC Championship game, the New England Patriots outlasted the Pittsburgh Steelers 24-17. The ProFootballReference.com website tells us that the difference maker in the game was Patriot Antoine Harris's return of 49 yards of a blocked field goal attempt. The New England victory placed them into Super Bowl 36. And who would they play? Well, that outcome was also decided on January 27, 2002 at the NFC Championship game for that season. It was played at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis to see who would face Tom Brady and the Patriots in Super Bowl 36. It was the greatest team on turf, the St. Louis Rams, who scored in every quarter to help them get past the Philadelphia Eagles 29-24. Rams' Marshall Faulk shouldered the load as he rushed 31 times for 159 yards and 2 TDs to lead St. Louis to the win per the PFR. January 27, 2013, at Aloha Stadium in Honolulu, the results of the 2012 season's NFL Pro Bowl game were that the NFC smoked the AFC 62-35, with tight end Kyle Rudolph of the Minnesota Vikings going home with the MVP honors per the OnThisDay.com website. January 27, 2019, Camping World Stadium in Orlando, Florida. The NFL Pro Bowl for the 2018 season had the new guys Patrick Mahomes of Kansas City and safety Jamal Adams of the New York Jets being voted as the co-MVPs as the AFC surged past the NFC 26-7 per the OnThisDay.com website. Now, we like to take our normal intermission, but today I want to tell you about something that's coming up next week. Starting on February 1st, that's Monday, we are going to play a contest on the pigskindispatch.com. It's called Search for the Yardage Contest. And what you do is we're going to have you use the search box on pigskindispatch.com. And we're along with our partners from the Sports History Network, we'd like to have you participate in this Pigskin Dispatch Search for Yardage Contest. Imagine that you're the play caller of your own offense. Your goal is to have the most yardage at the end of the week to win. Here's how you do it. Every day, starting Monday, February 1st, 2021, through Sunday, February 7th, 2021, the day of the Super Bowl, we will provide a search keyword in one of our posts. It could be in a daily PigskinDispatch.com article. It could be announced on this podcast. It could come from a Twitter post from the @PigskinDispatch Twitter handle. So you might want to like that one and make sure you're subscribed to that. Or our Pigskin Dispatch Facebook page. When you get the search keyword, jot it down and then search the word in the search box on the homepage of PigskinDispatch.com. That's going to take you to multiple results that will pop up. And the ones that will have a yellow triangle with a couple question marks in the upper right-hand corner of the photograph that's associated with them, when clicked upon, will give you yardage just once for that article, once per article, per email address, because that's what it's going to do. It's going to prompt you to enter your email address, and that'll tabulate when you enter in that email address, and it'll associate to your name. Don't worry, we're not going to sell your email to anyone. We're only going to use it for the contest and to send you what is happening on the pigskindispatch.com and possibly some stuff from the Sports History Network. The most points accumulated by Sunday, February 7th at 9 p.m. was going to win a nice prize, and we'll be able to notify you via email because we'll have your email address that you signed up for. And anytime you want to take your email address out of circulation with us, all you have to do is email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com and say, hey, please take my email out of circulation. We're not going to sell it to anybody. We want you to have some fun with the game and win a nice prize that we're offering. So again, that's coming up the week of the Super Bowl, starting off February 1st. Look for details on pigskindispatch.com and just keep listening to us and we'll tell you when it starts. Now let's get back to our birthdays of our Hall of Famers for this January 27th. We'll start off in year 1894 on that date, Chicago, Illinois. Frederick Douglass Fritz Pollard, the halfback from Brown University, celebrated his birth. Pollard was a trailblazer for generations to come, as he was the first African-American to play in the Rose Bowl in 1915. Fritz, according to his bio on the NFF website, was an All-American selection in 1916, as that season he made a 48-yard run against Rutgers, a 60-yarder against Yale, and had a series of long rushing plays, 47 yards, 35, 34, against Harvard. The National Football Foundation voters chose Fritz Pollard's gridiron legacy to be remembered in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1954. Fritz set another racial first in the professional game as in 1923 through 1925 with the Hammond Pros, he was the first African-American to serve as a head coach in a National Football League. Remember, 1923 he did that. Wow. Fritz Pollard was voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, making him deservedly so a member of both Halls of Fame. January 27th, 1901 in Coulterville, Pennsylvania, Art Rooney, the founder and the original owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, was born. According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Rooney purchased the Pittsburgh franchise, originally known as the Pirates, in 1933. Even though he was the first-time NFL owner, Art had dabbled in some semi-pro teams sports in the Pittsburgh area prior to his venture in the pro football at its highest level. His beloved Steelers teams were not very good for most of their first four decades of existence, and they even lost money at the start. But Rooney kept the faith and used his failures as a learning experience to build a winning formula. Finally, in 1975, the Steelers had put all of the pieces together, and they won the franchise's first championship in Super Bowl IX over the Vikings. Art Rooney was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1964. January 27, 1907, the Georgia Tech center Paul Pund was born. The National Football Foundation selected Peter Pund to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1963. January 27, 1920, the quarterback from Stanford University, Frankie Albert, arrived into this life. The National Football Foundation shares an excellent story on Frankie. In 1939, it starts out, Albert had a mediocre sophomore season playing tailback in Stanford's single-wing offense. His play was so poor that he considered quitting the Stanford squad. The following year, Stanford hired Clark Shaughnessy as a head coach. He was known as the father of the T formation. Shaughnessy saw that Albert was an excellent ball handler and passer whose skills were well-suited to playing quarterback in his revolutionary T formation. Stanford set an NCAA record for improvement in 1940, going from a 1-7-1 record in 1939 to a perfect 10-0 mark in 1940. Albert received All-America recognition in both his senior and his junior seasons after changing into that T formation. The NFF voters inducted Frankie Albert in 1956 into the College Football Hall of Fame. After college, he played with the San Francisco 49ers for six seasons in the NFL. Our last birthday for this January 27th is probably one of my favorite players ever to watch that wasn't on one of my teams. This guy was born in Boothwyn, Pennsylvania. A former Widener College halfback, Billy White Shoes Johnson, was born. The NFF says that Billy was a terrific performer. He wore white shoes and he did an end zone dance. When his three Widener seasons were added up, he had 3,737 yards rushing. His average was 9.1 yards per carry. He had 5,404 yards in all-purpose running, which was rushing, receiving, and kick returns. Scored 62 touchdowns from the period of 1971 through 1973 in college. His longest runs from scrimmage were 93 yards, 87, and 85 yards. He scored on punt returns of 94, 91, and 80, and a kickoff return of 85. The NFF voters inducted Bill Johnson into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1996. Billy White Shoes Johnson had a terrific NFL career with the Houston Oilers, the Falcons, as well as Washington, and made the game fun as he electrified every time he touched the ball on a play. Once again, we want to thank you for joining us today on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, and we hope you'll come back tomorrow. So hit that subscribe button. Check us out on pigskindispatch.com or your favorite podcast provider. And again, you can also find us at thesportshistorynetwork.com. And there's other great sports history podcasts there, too, that have some excellent hosts and guests and very interesting as well. So make sure you check that out. Sportshistorynetwork.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Have you ever noticed that the lower jaw is not protected in sports? Did you know that 10,800 concussions will happen today? This has been an upward trend for the past 50 years. I'm Dr. Michael Hutchison, a practicing neuromuscular dentist. When my son wanted to participate in football and rugby, I was afraid he was going to get a concussion. That fear led me to finding the missing link to reducing concussions. The fact is, the only part of the skull that is not protected in sports is the lower jaw. If you want to drastically reduce concussions, there are three basic jaw positions that affect concussions, and two of them are not good. The correct one is called physiologic jaw position. It will dissipate the force away from the brain. Knowing that, I designed an appliance that put my son's jaw in the right place, and as a result, he was concussion-free from fifth grade all the way to senior year. This jaw position takes those 10,800 concussions today down to 28. It's the key to concussion protection. As a parent, this is what you need to know. It's extremely important that the device you are using is on the lower jaw. Thickness of the device is important. Most importantly, it must position and hold you in your own unique personal physiologic jaw position. So if your child goes out on the field with the correct jaw position, your son or daughter will not one of those 10,800 concussions today. Get yours today at powerplusmouthguard.com. Use the promo code POWERUP2023 for 10% off.